Welcome to Music Majors Unplugged. Do you want to find your place in the world of music and succeed in a career? Do you find yourself up late at night thinking about what your next steps should be? Do you have ambitious goals but are unsure how to pursue them? Hello, my name is Aiden and I too was and still am a college student who wants to pursue music for a living but is unsure of what steps to take. I too feel overwhelmed with all of the things that I have tried to do to further my career and wished everything would just fall into place. I wanted to win a job, I wanted to be accepted into a summer festival, and I wanted to make a living in music, but I kept telling myself that I wasn't a strong enough player and that maybe music was not for me. I discovered that masterclasses were where I learned the best. Just listening and talking to professionals is the easiest way to learn about where you want to take your career in the future. In this podcast, you will learn about new career paths, listen to professionals that are working in the industry, and learn advice to take yourself to the next level so you can find your place in music. Kind of transitioning into the playing aspect, you come back from Hungary and you just freelance. You know, you have private students and you play a bunch.
Yeah.
What, obviously Iowa was your kind of home base already, but you are going back and forth between here and Hungary. How do you come back and you're just like, okay, this is what I'm going to do? Like, there's no real transition from college into it. Like, this is what I'm doing now. How did that process look?
Yeah, that was kind of a happenstance. Everything that has happened in my career has just kind of been happenstance. Mm-hmm. So the first time I came back from studying abroad, I did not intend to go into my master's degree right away. And I came back and it was January and I had to do auditions and I'd missed a lot of deadlines. So that's how I ended up where I, you know, staying here for a master's degree. And it was happenstance. And when I came back from Hungary in 2009, again, it was happenstance. It was a living situation with my girlfriend at the time. And I was broke because I'd been living abroad without a job. Well, I did teach English there for that time. I had a part-time job. I didn't make much money, but it was fun. And I came back home and I just said, I'm going to set up shop. And you just kind of deal with the circumstances. I probably could have transplanted anywhere at that point and it would have been equal.
Right.
Because I had some contacts, but I wouldn't say that they got me that much of a start in Des Moines. Probably the biggest help that was a draw. Actually, I lie, because the community college had reached out. I had a friend who was teaching at the community college in Creston in December, and I was in my last week in Hungary, and he sent me a Facebook message. Do you want to come back? Do you want to teach here starting in January? And it was like, I'm coming back to the country. I was sitting at a McDonald's using their Wi-Fi. And I remember this is like how I communicated. And I came back in January and started teaching there. So that was, I'm like, yeah, I don't really have anything else going on. So that's how I got started. And that experience paid off because it allowed me to get other jobs down the road. So just dumb luck sometimes, yeah, as well. Being in the right place at the right time and being ready to say yes.
Yeah. So you started teaching then?
Yeah. That right when I came back, pretty much, I started teaching at the community college at Southwestern Community College, SWCC.
Okay.
Which is an interesting program. It's mostly vocal jazz, but they teach everybody rhythm section.
Oh.
So as it's a very, I had students who were already had bachelor's degrees in music, and I had students from California and Canada and Las Vegas, and none of them were from Iowa. I had one from Iowa out of the whole program. And, but they needed to be vocal jazz musicians. They needed a very in-depth theory, and then they needed to learn how to play jazz bass, piano, and drums.
Oh, wow.
So
you taught a lot of drum set then?
I taught a lot of drum set. And I had a couple students who were interested in studying some classical, but mostly drum set.
So while you're doing that, I assume you're kind of playing gigs around the area?
Yeah, I actually went back to get my teaching license. So I took classes at Iowa State twice a week to try to get my teaching license because I wasn't sure if I wanted to do that. I still gigged in the Cedar Valley a lot because that was my kind of main contacts in Iowa. I was playing in Grinnell at their college a lot. I was playing in Cedar Rapids some. I was in Creston one day a week. I was in Ames twice a week for sure. My girlfriend was living in Cedar Rapids at the time, and I mostly came to Cedar Falls once a week. I was driving about 800 miles a week minimum. I ended up teaching at a drum. There was a drum shop in West Des Moines called Joyful Noise, and a guy I didn't know him all that well at the time, John Kazillermoot, had moved to Des Moines, and he was the guy around. And I kind of became friends with him, and he invited me to the shop to teach with him and kind of introduced me. So we shared the back room, which was an awesome giant space. We had a marimba and a vibraphone in there that we shared, and a drum set with a computer and recording stuff. And basically it was a little rehearsal space, lab, and teaching space, and we both worked it out. John was getting kind of transitioning out, so he handed some students off to me, and we kind of split the space and split his studio. And that kind of helped me to get established in Des Moines. So a lot of that was circumstance again, and just being introduced to John and kind of having some nice conversation with him and him feeling comfortable with that.
Okay. And so what was your process to then becoming a professor here at University of Northern Iowa?
Oh, I don't know if I can explain the process, but it's...
Or I guess like what led up to it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, this would have been a dream, but at that point it was a growing studio. So we kind of grew the position. I started by teaching just keyboard lessons. I did all the marimba lessons for the first several years. So at that point, Professor Hogenkamp was the marimba, the percussion repertoire has evolved a lot. And I had a really nice discussion with him when they were hiring. And we talked about this when I got hired. We need another person here to help. And we landed on that agreement because the repertoire has evolved so much for marimba, especially in the last 20 or 30 years. Yeah. And, you know, he'd been teaching here since the 70s. And he said, you know, that's something that I have not kept up with nearly as much. And knowing how engaged in that world and engrossed in that music I was, he thought that was a natural split for me to teach all the keyboard percussion, and he's taught snare drum and timpani for those years. So it was kind of grew out of a growing studio.
Mm-hmm.
We had more need, and then we kind of evolved into what it is now. It's been an ever-changing evolution, which is nice.
Yeah, it's funny. We in one of our practice rooms, we have that big wall of books. And sometimes I just, like, when I need a break, I go and look through them. And there's a lot of them that are just, like, lists of repertoire.
Yeah.
And you look through the keyboard stuff, I'm like, I don't recognize any of this.
From the 90s, I always felt that the 90s were, like, the blossom or the boom where things started to change.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at that point, having a 4.3 was... like all you were ever going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And even at UNI, we only had 1 5 octave marimba. And I think we got that in 99. So they weren't really common, even at universities.
Yeah. And was that Randy's personal marimba?
Maybe he got his first.
Okay.
The Adams came in 99.
Oh, okay.
And he bought his around that time. But it wasn't that common. Most of the repertoire didn't expand to 5 octaves, and kind of the technique, I would say, like, the Keiko Abe repertoire was about as technical as it got
right at
that time. And the repertoire changed more slowly because we didn't have access to it from YouTube recordings or whatever. So CDs, when they came out, were a big deal, and getting access to recordings was kind of... And, you know, just the dispersion of music was slower, frankly. So things really ramped up, I think, once 5-octave marimbas became more available or more common. And that was probably mostly like when I was in school, in high school and college. So I kind of grew up with that boom. And I still think it's changing at a really rapid pace now, not because of the instruments or the repertoire, but more because of the accessibility with the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it's easier for smaller, like freelance composers to get their music performed and get it out there public.
Yeah. Not to derail, but kind of going back on the freelance stuff. So you get the job here, you're playing a lot, you know, in Des Moines, Iowa City. Mm-hmm. And then at some point you won a job with the Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony.
Yeah. And I had been playing with that orchestra already pretty regularly.
Yeah.
For years. So nothing really changed. It just became official.
Right. It just like, yeah. Oh, now you get all of the emails instead of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last. And how did that change the freelance aspect of your life? Because now it's like something that you have a real commitment to.
Yeah. Well, so I set up a lot of the, what's odd is that a lot of the freelancing I did when I was in school and continued. So I played, when I was in school here, Warburg used to hire student musicians to fill out their orchestra.
Mm.
So I'd play there. I kept that when I was in Des Moines. Oh. I would still come up and play. It paid like $100 or $150 for the day. It was worth it for me to come up. I had friends here.
Yeah.
They, you know, don't tell them. I hope nobody will listen to this that hears this. But like they were like, oh, it's a community. We don't want you to drive up from Des Moines. It's too far. I'm like, well, this is just my permanent address. So I'd mail music to friends in Cedar Falls and stay connected that way. And I still to this day, I play a church gig in town that I played Easter at that church when I was in college. So I've done 20 Easter services with that church.
Wow.
But now they've expanded what they do. So a lot of those things have grown out of like long-term relationships. And honestly, not much changes. You just kind of dig yourself deeper into those things.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody calls you from someplace else that you met. You know, you get to this orchestra and you meet somebody and they call you for another thing. And everything kind of branches out from those main ones.
Yeah. Do you ever have a fear, or I guess not now, but when you were starting, did you have like a fear of turning things down?
Yes. I said yes to one or two gigs that I should not have.
Yeah.
One in particular, I think. There's one that I remember that I tried to tell them no. It was a Latin group. It was like a salsa band.
Mm-hmm.
And they were desperate for somebody. And I told them, I'm like, no, I really don't feel comfortable with this, but they needed somebody. And
Kit or?
No, I played timbales.
They okay.
needed a timbale player. I'm like, I have a very precursory knowledge of doing this and I've done a little bit, but I'm really not adept enough to play like a 2-hour gig with y'all tonight. Mm-hmm. And I really regret, like looking back, I'm like, I should not have played that gig. But my whole philosophy is you don't want to say no when this is your income.
Right.
And I wanted to be able to say yes. There are some things where I definitely know my line now and I don't need or I value my time a little bit more than some things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard place to be because I honestly like doing those gigs a lot of times. It's just like I need some time for myself or I need to mow my lawn.
Yeah.
Or I need to practice because I have another thing coming up.
Right.
And you do have to ultimately choose where your values lie. If it's making money at that moment and you need to pay bills, or if it's like, no, I have this project that I'd really like to do and I'm putting it off for this measly paycheck at a gig that's going to take the rest of my day and drive me bonkers.
Right.
And it that's changed over time. And it still changes season to season, probably.
What, when you were in school or maybe even a little bit out of school, what was your line? Because I think one of my biggest fears is saying yes to a gig that if I don't play well is going to turn down other gigs, you know? So like you talking about the salsa band, like you weren't apt for that. What was kind of your like thought process of like, ooh, this might not be a good idea just because.
Well, I knew up front I was not ready for it.
Right.
And I had a phone call with them and kind of talked through it. And I explained that and they were like, no, you should do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, that's on you, but it's really on me. But I also didn't really have like charts in advance to set myself up for success. And there are some limitations of like drum set. Like, I like playing drum set, but I'm definitely not, I don't consider myself to be a jazz drummer. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to take a jazz drum set gig that I don't feel comfortable with.
Right.
Playing drum set in a role with like a combo that's accompanying a choir, or playing it as part of a, even like an orchestra gig that's like a combo with drum set or pops concert, I feel totally comfortable with. Mm-hmm. I think we just have to know our limits. And like, well, there's a church gig right now that I play. I usually play like auxiliary percussion and glockenspiel and shakers and things. And I think I'm going to play drum set next week because they need somebody. And I'm like, yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah.
I feel comfortable in that setting. Like, it's just a personal taste. So,
awesome. What advice do you have to current students or, you know, recent graduates that are looking to kind of plant themselves as a freelancer and a performer within a certain, you know, maybe a new area for them?
I think probably the most important thing is kind of establishing some relationships. So that sometimes in the first years meant saying yes to gigs that I didn't like, just so I could meet some people and get them to know me a mm-hmm. little bit, maybe even a couple, heaven forbid, free gigs or things that I wasn't really making a lot of money on, that took a lot of time and energy. But I played some of those gigs with and carpooled with people, and we got to know each other, and they would take me along to other things later. Might be reaching out to band directors. Even if you're not teaching, you can kind of get in with them and they might have a gig. And I think it's really about just kind of showing up to things. Like, if you're a jazz musician, just show up to other jazz gigs mm-hmm. and introduce yourself to musicians, because they're, at some point they may say, hey, do you want to sit in? And most of the time, they're all going to need to call a sub at some point. And if you're their friend, they're going to know who to call.
Right.
So that's probably the best advice I can give.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate it. Just like two more things. What is your biggest accomplishment as a performer? Or educator, I suppose.
Oof. That's a really hard question. Honestly, I don't know that I have a main accomplishment. Like, I feel like there's always something that I'm working towards.
Yeah.
And whatever that is kind of what I'm focused on. I've never really been that focused on, like, this thing is done.
Because mm-hmm.
nothing's ever done.
Right.
Like, probably I would say the Iowa Hungry Project has been a big accomplishment. But it's kind of just a piece of the pie, and it all ties in. So I don't think I can actually answer that.
Okay. Well, you know, you talk about going forward. The last thing I have, is there anything in the future that you want to promote? Perhaps performances or album release?
Yeah, I do have a CD coming out, hopefully sometime soon. Still need to finish it. I woke up at like 3:00 this morning thinking about when am I going to schedule these last sessions. It's almost done, and it's all commissions from recent years, and they're all from various projects. One of them is written by my duo partner in Hungary, but the rest of them came from collaborations with other faculty members that I used to teach with. One of them was a consortium commission that I was part of. Some have been direct commissions, just one-offs. It's kind of a smattering of various projects, and I hope to finish that this year. Well, in the next couple of months, this summer, I've got all but two tracks done.
Okay.
So
I'll have Bandcamp or whatever?
It's on Bandcamp,
yeah, I'll have that linked in the description. So if people want to check it out,
yeah,
for sure can. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Prof. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you guys for listening.
All right. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you could take 30 seconds to follow us and share with a friend who also might find this information helpful, that would mean a lot. Follow us on social media. It means the world to know that this podcast is making a difference in your life. Keep practicing, performing, and learning. We'll be back soon with another episode.